This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on January 20, 2026 in Seneca Falls, New York.
Greetings to everyone this morning. I live and we live 1,400 miles away in South Central Kansas, and I'd like to begin by just saying a little something about the weather by way of introduction. I've never been in New York really in my life, and we live in South Central Kansas, and we've had a very, very mild winter there. It's been largely open, warm, and sunny. And we keep asking ourselves back there, are we going to get any taste of winter this year? And we get snow sometimes, and we've had just a skiff of it this year, but not much. And so Sunday evening, I was outside walking around a little bit, taking care of some animals, and I was in my shirt sleeves. We've had 50s and 60s all through December and into January. And then early Monday morning, my wife and I flew to Chicago, and we got to Chicago, and somebody told us it was below zero there, and it felt like it. When you went by and the doors were open, felt like it was below zero, and we finally, after about a two-hour delay, we ended up on our plane for Buffalo. We were flying to Buffalo, never been there in my life, and we waited there a while and didn't know what all was going on, and finally the pilot comes on like they do and gave us a little update, and he said, well, we're going to fly to Buffalo here shortly, but he said, we're not sure if we can land there or not. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. And he said, we need to have enough fuel to make it to a secondary airport. And he said, we've chosen Pittsburgh is going to be our secondary airport if we can't land in Buffalo. And I thought, well, that sounds like a good plan. I wasn't even thinking about the business planning topic then, but I thought, that sounds like a good plan. But he said, we're going to have to ask three people to get off the plane so we can put on enough fuel to make it to our secondary airport. And I don't know how he decided. I don't know how they decided who got off. I didn't see him asking around or anything, but before long, three people got up and got off the plane, and they added more fuel, and we made it into Buffalo. But as we flew into Buffalo, they said the conditions are much better now. I think we'll have no problem flying into Buffalo. And we were flying in and coming down, and a lot of snow in the air and everything. And I thought, I don't know if it looks all that great, really. But nevertheless, we had a good, safe landing, and we're very happy to be here. But I told my wife on the way in, I said, I think we're getting our taste of winter here. I don't know if we'll have anything like that at home or not, but I think we're going to have our taste of winter. I also want to say this by way of introduction before I jump into my topic, is that we as speakers come, and we have to, by necessity, have a little something prepared to say. And sometimes we have more than others, and sometimes our thoughts are lined up in a row, and sometimes we feel kind of scattered, but nevertheless, we come with the idea that we've got a little something to share, and yet we come to learn as well. And my wife is coming with me, and I'm very thankful to have her with me here today. And she was asking me about, she wasn't trying to get out of being here today, but she just asked the question, I think on the way out here, should I plan on being there the whole time, or should I, you know, occupy myself back in the motel or what have you? And I was privileged to look at the slides beforehand, and Daryl made much apology about not sharing his slides ahead of time, but I was able to look at them just a few days before the seminar here, and so I saw his presentation, and I saw his slide about who's gonna educate, who's gonna teach our 15 to 19 year old boys. And we have one son, an only son. We have five daughters and one son, and our son is 17. He's right in the middle of that age range, and it's a very, very tender subject right now, as me as a 58 year old father is bringing up a 17 year old son. And I think things are going well, and he's a good young man, but it's a very, very tender subject. And I told her, I told her about that one slide out of the presentation. I said, I think you ought to be there. I said, I think you'd be glad to be there. And I was very thankful to hear that backdrop as Daryl shared about the changes in circumstances in our economy and our society and what it means for our young men. Not just economically, but relationally, as they move apart from their fathers and that agrarian lifestyle. And I realized as he was talking this morning that he wasn't just talking about my 17-year-old son, but He's actually talking about me. It was a light bulb experience, and I thought, he's actually talking about me. And I turned 17 in 1984. And I know some of you that are here this morning weren't even born in 1984, but that's when I turned 17. That's when I was the age of my 17-year-old son. And I grew up on a family farm, and it involved a dairy and some other livestock and crop farming and so forth. And I'll just say we hit a brick wall at about 1980 and 1981 and 1982 and experienced some severe financial distress, and that affected our relationships and our church life and our family life and my parents' lives together and so forth. It was very much a time of crisis in my life, and I realized that he was actually talking about me, and that was the moment that I left the agrarian lifestyle that I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life in, and kind of in some ways had to kind of figure out my way on my own from that point forward. Now, why do I share all that? I share all that because we come to learn as well, and we come to be inspired and to have insights. And Daryl's talk there about our young men was like a light bulb for me. It was like something turned on for me, and I developed some thoughts even in terms of relating to my son from this point forward that I'm not going to forget when I go home. But it also introduces my subject very, very well here this morning, and that is I'm here to talk about business planning, planning with purpose and intention. But in order to teach about business planning, I just wanted to tell a story, really, a story about our family life and starting a family business. And I told people repeatedly, and this is where Daryl's talk had so much meaning for me, I've told people repeatedly that this was our family farming experience. Now, the name of our business was Family Food Store, and it was actually a retail food store with a deli and a bakery and a little boutique grocery in the little town of Sawyer, Kansas, with a population within the city limits of about 100 people. And if you draw a 20-mile circle around Sawyer and our store there in Sawyer, Kansas, about 10,000 people. It's different than here, and it's different than Pennsylvania. I was just talking to somebody there from Ephrata, and they said, well, if you draw a 1-mile circle around our business, there's about 35,000 people. So we live in a different part of the world, a very rural part of the country, and we're thankful for that. And we enjoy going to more populated areas sometimes, too. We're not criticizing them, but we live in a very, very, very rural area. And so I tell people that our business, Family Food Store, was our family farm experience. And what I mean by that is, and I'm going back to 1984 when I was 17 and when I left this dream that I was just going to grow up and I was going to farm with my dad for the rest of my life or for the rest of his life. And then beyond that, that's what I thought I was going to do. Economic circumstances kind of changed my course. But you know the saying, and I think a lot of people across the Anabaptist communities are dealing with what I'm going to say now. It's just a saying, but you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't, they say, take the country out of the boy. Or you can take the boy off the farm, but you can't take the farm out of those kinds of thoughts. That agrarian lifestyle and the values and the feelings and the environment that we developed in our childhood and in the farming environment, they shape us through life. And so I realized that I was going through life and I worked in other settings and other jobs and so forth, but I realized that I really kind of wanted to be back on the farm again. And yet for reasons that, for various reasons, we felt like we couldn't get back to the farm. There again, there's a common thread in other Anabaptist communities and other Anabaptist people. And so we reached the point of realizing that we're going to have to seize, if we can, a family farm experience that's not involved in production agriculture, farming per se, in a proper sense. And so my beloved and I, we decided, and it was with a lot of angst and rolling this around over a period of years and so forth, but we decided we were going to establish our family farm experience. But it was not going to be a farm, it was actually going to be a store. It's going to be a small retail food store in Sawyer, Kansas, with a population of about 100 people. And so it was going to be an extension of our homeschool. It was going to be an opportunity for our daughters, and remember, we have five daughters and just one son, an opportunity for our daughters to learn about business and about the public and about meeting the public and meeting their needs and serving them in a public environment there in our little food store in Sawyer, Kansas. And oh, by the way, we wanted to be a good witness and a good light. I listened to part of Gary's talk about business's mission, and we didn't have that all figured out and couldn't articulate it all, but we wanted it. We wanted it to be a place of light and salt in this world in which we live, right there in Sawyer, Kansas, with a population of about 100 people. And oh, by the way, I was still working half-time in town in my prior job, but we actually wanted to make enough money that we could make it work kind of half-time. So we decided we were going to open this store from just Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of every week, 3 days a week. And so on October 19th of 2012, we began this family business venture, and we've included a picture here of our storefront back in those early days, and this is a picture of our family back in those early days, and we began this family farm experience. Just to elaborate a little bit more, one of the goals and objectives we had and that I had is I had always worked in town, and I'd never had an opportunity like my dad did with me to work alongside. And that's part of what Daryl was talking about. And so I wanted an opportunity not with a family full of sons, but with a family full of daughters. I wanted an opportunity to work alongside them and them to work alongside me before they left home. So that was one of our objectives. And so in order to make that work, I thought, we need a plan. I'm a list person and kind of an objective planning type person. And I thought, we need a plan really to move into this. We don't want to fail. We want to have our best shot at success in our family food store. And so I developed and wrote a plan, a business plan for our business. And again, I'm going to try to share some business planning principles with you here in two sessions. This first one is oriented more around why, more of an inspirational look at why do I need a business plan, or why do I need to do anything different than what I'm doing. And the second one is intended to be a little bit more of a how-to. So I was also sensitive to Daryl's comments about, and I appreciated it so much, his coffee time experience with his wife. And I looked at his slides a week ago, and I wondered about this B&W. I thought, what? No B&W. What would that be? And I thought, it'll probably become apparent. So I'll just wait and see. I almost wanted to reach out to him, but no B&W. And in connection with his coffee with his wife in the morning, and my wife and I enjoy that as well. No B&W. What would that be? And I have to admit, it kind of smote me. No bragging, and no whining. That was very profound. That was another light bulb experience that I'm going to take away and not forget from this being here today. So I thought about including a picture, and I thought, I don't even know if I should include a picture of my family. Well, we're not intending to brag, and we of course, like our family, but our purpose in sharing a family picture in front of our store is just to illustrate the topic of our talk today, which is why. Why a business plan? And that's probably the best representation of what we could offer you to inspire why to do a better job of business planning is to look at our family and to realize that's why we were going in business, and that's why we needed a plan so that we could get somewhat on the same page regarding where we're going with intention and with purpose. That's really the purpose of a business plan is to unite our efforts on the same page. And we learned, and I could joke about it, but we don't want to joke about it in an improper way because it's real and it's true. I learned that my wife and I didn't always see things alike, or the same, I should say, in business. And my daughters didn't either. And so business planning and having meetings even with our family around our business plan gave us an opportunity to walk through and talk through and unify our hearts and our minds about what we were doing and about where we were going. I realized that our store endeavor was small. It's small, it's tiny. In fact, I find it interesting, and I come to settings like this, and I think surely my family business experience was probably the tiniest one that's even here today. And yet the principles of business planning transcend all sizes and shapes and types of businesses that we have here today. And so I want to get to one of those now as I move to the next slide. This is just intended to be kind of a funny cartoon, and I don't think it has anything to do with gender. I just thought about this as I was preparing earlier. I don't think it has anything to do with the confusion in the world today. I think it's just a funny cartoon about who else should we target. In other words, aren't we targeting everybody? Wouldn't we do anything for anybody? And it's probably one of the first principles of business planning. As part of what our business plan does is to begin to define who we're serving, the market that we're trying to serve. And it necessarily involves saying no as well as yes. One of the reasons we didn't just try to get back into farming again is because I had developed through life a reserve regarding debt. I just thought, I don't think I can go there. I don't think we can go in debt. And my wife felt the same way. And so that was one of our no's. And it's written in our business plan. Is we had some parameters around debt, and we had some exceptions. I don't want to say we did it without any debt entirely. We borrowed some money privately within our church congregation, but that was one of our parameters. We didn't want to be leveraged to the hilt in debt, and that was part of our business plan. Well, this who else should we target in terms of customers? I'd just like to tell a couple stories about that. And that is, my wife, she grew up in a family bakery. They baked a lot, and I benefited so much from her input and her experience from her upbringing and a family business as well, and farm-related and food-related, but she grew up in a bakery, and I just won't say anything much about that except to say that for us, she said, I don't want to be all things to all people. In other words, I would rather establish what we can do and what we can do well and draw some parameters around it and be willing to say, no, we actually don't do that. And remember, I said within our city limits there, we have about 100 people, and I was the financial man. You know, I'm the accountant with accounting background, and I was the one tasked with making this work, and I had a desire to make it work. And in a sense, in the beginning, I went into it more with the perspective of what wouldn't we do, and who wouldn't we do anything for in our family business? And it became a little bit of a joke that we would have people ask us, and I've used this almost as a metaphor before, the raisin cream pie. So we made pies, and we made 8 pies in our family business, if I'm not mistaken. And 6 of them year-round, and 2 only through the holiday season, and that's what we did. And so we had repeated requests. I don't know what it is in South Central Kansas, but repeated requests for raisin cream pies. And I have to admit, it created some angst in me to say no, but we don't do raisin cream pies. And I learned over time, and I tried to answer sweetly. I'm just illustrating in a very basic way the thought of limitation and restraint and not being all things to all people. And so the raisin cream pie became kind of a metaphor of us saying, no, that's actually not what we do. Now, I don't know what the raisin cream pie is in your business, but we all have to have some raisin cream pies, a line beyond which we will not go in terms of our product and service offering. And that's all right. And I remember having customers saying, I've actually got my grandma's recipe of raisin cream pie, and could you not make it for me? And I just knew that we couldn't. One reason why is because we were not oriented that way. We didn't have the time for it, and we didn't have the staffing for it. And sometimes I would make an exception, and it would put pressure on my family, who was carrying the load at that point in time in the bakery that they were not ready or willing to bear. And so I learned to say, no, we don't make raisin cream pie. But I want to tell another story about that. Who else should we target? Again, in the beginning, I thought, we've got a food store, and we need to do anything and everything we can to generate income in Sawyer, Kansas. So it was going to be a food store, and we wanted to have a bakery. And my wife had some experience with baking, and we wanted to have a deli and make sandwiches and a dine-in experience and to be able to interact with customers in that way and so forth. But I was also, and I'm just guessing there's people here that'll be able to relate to this. I was born and raised in a plain home, conservative home, and like a lot of our homes, we have the concept, we don't always execute very well, but the concept of living frugally. And so in our age, in the last 20 years, there's been this explosion of this new food concept called the discount grocery. Sometimes they're called dent and dent groceries, and sometimes they're called ding and dent and so forth. But the idea is you could actually buy a can of something that was worth like $1.79 for maybe 10 cents. And it's exhilarating, and it's just kind of almost mind-boggling. Cheap stuff. And because we occasionally like to go in a place like that and save that kind of money, we thought, well, we would like to do that as well. And so we developed a little vision for it. We're going to have a discount grocery. Before we opened, we were cleaning out the building and painting it and getting ready and so forth. And we even put a little sign up and said, here's the things we intend to bring to Sawyer Cans, a bakery and a deli and a discount grocery. And I thought, these people don't even know what it is probably, but they're going to find out. Well, before we opened, we were closer to getting opening and starting to thinking about stocking with inventory and so forth, and I tried to source some banana boxes, and those of you that know what I'm talking about, but banana boxes, and started to get some product laid in and so forth, and to make a long story short, the powers that be, the vendors and suppliers said, really, number one, this is small potatoes. I mean, you don't have enough volume to really, we can't even talk about supplying you. And number two, Sawyer, Kansas is kind of what we call a freight hole. And it's just too expensive really to send anything in there because frankly, there's nothing coming back out. And so you really can't afford to buy discount groceries. You just can't. That's just kind of what we come up against. And I just want to tell you, looking back, and this is where we see the hand of the Lord helping us through things that we weren't even able to think through ourselves, but it would have been an absolute disaster for our family and our business if we would have started getting banana boxes and tried to create a discount grocery. Now, I'm not impugning discount groceries, and occasionally we still like to go in one, but that idea would have been wrong for us in so many levels. It didn't match up really with our labor supply, our family. It didn't match up with our facility in terms of volume and warehousing and so forth. And furthermore, and I might touch on this afternoon in our other session, it didn't match up with our customer at all. In fact, the kind of people, and this is part of what business planning is all about, is figuring out what kind of people are coming through our doors. But the kind of people that walk in discount groceries are not even the same kind of people that are interested in spending $10 for a sandwich. They're not even the same people. And that was a lesson, a profound lesson in business planning for us. And so I'm just illustrating the point here with this cartoon. Who else are we going to target? And part of what business planning does is define not just what we're going to do, but what we're not willing to do. And for us, that became banana boxes along with the raisin cream pie. The next thought I want to share is I want to give a very simple definition. It's probably not complete enough, but I tried to be real simple with what is a business plan? What do we mean by a business plan? I'm confident that everybody in the room has a plan somewhat for their business. And we're not criticizing any of them. We're trying to encourage and inspire our thoughts about business planning. But here's our point. Unless you have it written down in a way that you can share with others, you don't have a business plan. You might have a plan for your business in your mind, but you don't have a business plan if it's not something that you could set down and share with your family or your managers or your employees. I was outside in the hallway getting ready, but I overheard Gary talking a little bit about going into a business, and he said, now this is what we intend for our business to be. I'm paraphrasing. And he said, this isn't for the public. We're not putting this on the wall, but once a year or so, he would bring his family, his boys, I believe, into the office, and he would reread it to them, what Gary shared, apparently, up on the screen. Well, I'm suggesting that was part of his business plan. And he was offering parameters not just about what we're doing, but in some ways even what we're not willing to do in our business. So a business plan is simply a plan for our business committed to paper. with varying complexity depending on our circumstances. And all I mean by that is a business plan is like a set of fingerprints. There aren't any two alike. And at Anabaptist Financial, we have a business planning workshop, and we actually teach a model, and we walk through it step by step, and I'm going to share some of that with you today, but I don't even mean to pretend that our model is the be-all, end-all of business planning. Everybody that follows our model, even, which is just a model to help someone walk through the creation of a business plan, they're still like fingerprints when they come out the other side. There's still no two alike. I want to speak a little bit about why we don't, what are not reasons for business planning, the business planning process. And I'm going to need to be brief here because I already see the time ticking away, so I'm going to try to pick up my speed just a little bit so I don't leave slides out at the end. But these are not really reasons why to business plan. It could almost seem this way. It could almost seem like, well, I plan my business to assure an outcome. But that's not really true, is it? We walk by faith and not by sight, and none of us know what's around the corner. We could ask for a show of hands, how many saw COVID-19 coming? And I didn't expect to see any hands because nobody saw it coming, and yet it affected every one of our businesses and our business lives. And so business planning is not about assuring outcomes. It's not about knowing the future, and it's really not about satisfying other people. One of the primary reasons that a business plan is even created is to show a lender to obtain financing, debt financing to fund business operations. I'm just saying that's not really a good reason to plan business. Well, let's go to the next slide and just talk about some of the reasons that we do, some of the business reasons why. One is to assess our business situation. Two is to identify our resources. Remember, I said earlier we weren't willing to go very far in debt. We had some limitation. We were willing to accept a loan from a brother in our church congregation, but we weren't really interested in going any further than that. And that's part of what our business did. It said we've only got so many resources, and without leverage, we can't go any further. So that's what a business plan does. It identifies our resources, and it envisions our business future. It looks out into the future and projects what could happen in our business scenario. Part of what I'm trying to do here is try to avoid this kind of this health, wealth, and prosperity gospel type of thinking that is so prevalent in our world today. And we don't want to infer that business planning is kind of this name it and claim it, and by the power of our own planning, we're gonna achieve that which we're just not really interested in going there. And we're gonna go to a couple scriptures now that'll speak of that. We believe in planning. We believe in intention and we believe in purpose, but it's not because we think we know what the future holds. God alone knows our future, and we want to be faithful even as we plan into that uncertain future. We'd like to share three scriptures here that touch on the subject, really, either directly or indirectly, of planning, of business planning, and we hope we're not treating any of them inappropriately. The first one is the scripture here in James, and we're just titling it Submissively Seeking God's Will, and that's what we're doing in business planning. That's what God's people do when they plan, and in any way they're seeking the will of God, and they're yielding their plan even to the will of God. And so James teaches like this: "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow," and for us that began October 19th, 2012, "we will go into such and city," and for us that was Sawyer, Kansas, "and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow." And there in the middle there he says something about, do you not know that your life is even, it's like a fog. It appears for a little while and then it vanishes away. "For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that." So we hear it often, I'm sure you do as well, and we want to keep hearing it. We want to keep it in our hearts that if the Lord wills, we shall do this or do that. And yet the teaching contains this implicit assumption that it's okay to go into a city and buy and sell and get gain, and even to say that we plan to do so. But we ought to say, if the Lord will, we will do this or do that. Second scripture we want to speak of is the one that we call the counting the cost scripture. These are the words of Jesus. And we'll just read it here. For which of you intending to build a tower, from Luke 14, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it, lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it because he didn't count his resources well enough in the beginning, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Now, we know that the context here, and that we want to freely acknowledge this, the primary context and teaching here is not about business and business planning. The primary context is about following Jesus. And Jesus is saying, if you're not committed to giving everything you have to follow me, you're not a worthy follower. That's really what he's teaching. And yet I would like to make note of two things. He uses for an example a remarkable illustration of business planning, of counting money and counting resources and counting time, probably people and beams and so forth, counting and laying out a plan to finish a work. That's what Jesus used as an example. And the other thing I just want to say, and we'll just go brief with it here, but the other thing I want to say is, if Jesus was really teaching that we should be willing to sacrifice everything we have in following him, who are we to say that that's not relevant to our business life? In other words, does our business plan contemplate the idea that we would willingly give it all for Jesus' sake? And so we think it's relevant, as we think about business planning, to think about the words of Jesus in terms of counting the cost. And perhaps some of what Gary even shared, this idea that when we're over here in business, it's not something other than life. It's a part of our life which we desire to consecrate and sacrifice to follow Jesus. And the third one that we want to make note of is humbly involving others, from Proverbs 15 and 22. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. I alluded to it earlier, and I just share the illustration from my little family business situation there in Sawyer, Kansas. And I alluded to it earlier, and I'm thankful that it's this way, and it's beautiful, and it's God's design. But I learned that, and I thought my wife and I were doing well, getting along well, and sharing life together well. But I learned this. I learned that when we entered business together, it somehow rubbed us up against each other in a different way than we ever had before, relationally. And it was a challenge to figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And it ended up being a beautiful experience. But I'm just saying, business planning became a tool for us to share and to unite our efforts together in business. I learned an awful lot about what she thought about business. She thought of me as the business person. But I learned a lot about what she thought of business from her childhood experiences and so forth. I also learned with my daughters that when I laid more work on them than they thought they could handle, whether it be raising cream pies or anything else that we didn't do, they didn't like it very well. And I had to hear their counsel. I had to figure out how we're going to do this together, and not Dad driving this effort upon the backs of his family and his children. And we men sometimes don't comprehend how much we need other people. Whether it's our wives or our children or your employees, your managers or your sons, and we had a lot of lessons to learn about how much. I think Daryl talked about leadership being influence and how much influence we really had on them, and yet how much we needed to yield to their input and perspective on what we were doing together. Jesus said one time, he that is chief, let him be as your servant. He didn't necessarily say it was wrong to be a chief. And I've thought over the years in that family business setting and in other ways in life. And we men reach a place in life where we didn't see it coming, but we find ourselves as chief. And every father that welcomes a new baby in the world becomes a chief. And we can take it in all the wrong ways, but there's a rightful way to take it. He's been granted a position of authority. And what's he going to do with it? And Jesus said, "He that is chief, let him be as your servant." Same thing happens in church life. Men find themselves in a responsibility that they hadn't contemplated before. And it wouldn't be wrong for them to go around and call themselves chief. That's not what we're implying at all. But it would be right for them to recognize that they have a position of influence and responsibility that they didn't have before. And Jesus said, "He that is chief, let him be as your servant." Now, we want to talk a little bit about strategy. We can't talk about business planning without talking about strategy. And within every business plan, and the two terms are not quite synonymous, but within every business plan, there is a strategic plan. And a strategic plan involves more action, if you will. And it involves a bigger picture. And so we offer a definition for strategy here. Strategy defined. Strategy comes from the Greek word stratego, which means the general's view of the battlefield. So it's a military term, and you can kind of imagine it, that the general generally didn't, in any warfare anywhere, generals generally don't find themselves on the front lines. They find themselves in places where they can observe the whole and make the best decisions about what ought to be happening here and here and here. And so to be strategic, it suggests that to be strategic is to be comprehensive, to cover the landscape and to span the entirety of the organization. We've read before, I can't document this or substantiate it, but we've read before that even in the time of the Civil War, they sent up observation balloons with men hanging in a basket, a blimp, if you will, to see over the next hill and to give them a vantage point on what's the big picture here? What's really happening? And we're suggesting to you that that's what strategic planning is. It's backing away far enough that we can see comprehensively. And you've probably heard the expression before about how important it is to not just work in the business, but to back away from it and to work on the business, or to think about the business as a whole. That's what we mean by strategy. That's what strategy is. Whether or not, try to draw a distinction here based on a couple stories I've told, whether or not we add a ninth pie, raisin cream pie, that's a tactical decision. That won't change a whole lot. Add some sales and require a little different labor scenario and some ingredients. But that's primarily a tactical decision. But if we decide to open within our business a discount grocery, that's strategic. That's a big deal. That's going to affect everything in a far-reaching way. That's what we mean by strategy and strategic planning. We're going to get into that a little bit more, but I wanted to introduce the definition here. I'm going to conclude here really with a scripture, and then I've got a story that I want to share. I've saved a few minutes here to tell a little story, but in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. That's a scripture. I'm just noting it here. I'm not going to really talk about it, but it's a parallel. It's a parallel really back in the Proverbs to the words there of James when he said, if the Lord will, we ought to do this or do that. We don't want to think about business planning as just a secular tool that we use to try to make our business better, but we want to think even of our business planning efforts as a way to acknowledge the Lord. To acknowledge the Lord and trust him to direct our paths. Now, here's a story that I wanted to tell in conclusion as we think about business planning. when we were cleaning out our store building and getting ready to open, and again, we were open for 12 years to the day, and I'll touch on that again this afternoon. So we opened our store very intentionally, and we closed it very intentionally as well. We announced 6 months to the day that we were going to close it, and we closed it on our 12-year anniversary. And we'll talk a little bit about that perhaps this afternoon. But the story is this. We were cleaning out our building and painting it and getting it ready and dreaming about the kinds of things you dream about when you're starting up a business. And we had some friends of ours come out from Indiana, and he's a minister in our church, and they're peers of ours, and we feel real close to him. And they came and they spent the weekend with us, and it's kind of a show of support, really. And so Sunday evening, we're sitting around in our house. We'd spent the day with them on Saturday and did some cleaning in our store, and they helped us with that. And then we did a little something Saturday evening. And Sunday we went to church, and Sunday evening, we're sitting there in our house and just enjoying an evening of fellowship with them. And he told me this. He said, Greg, he said, we came into a little bit of money. And he said it was kind of a bad deal. He said it was almost like a bad debt situation. Somebody owed him money, and they ended up writing it off as a bad debt expense. And then a little bit later, they got this payment or partial payment. I don't know what it was for sure, but it was a little bit of a windfall coming their way. And he said, we don't feel like it's even our money because of the way this has all transpired, and we don't need it, and we've moved on, and so forth. So he said, it's not really our money, but he said, I'd like to give it to you. I'd like to give it to you as a contribution and as a show of support for your store startup here. Like I said, we were a small business. I know that we were, and I didn't want to appear desperate, but I was probably kind of eager, although I didn't know if I wanted to act like it or not. That's kind of how I felt. And I thought, I don't know if, you know, just the way he told the story, I thought, I don't know if he's talking about $500 or $1,000, but we were trying to do it without debt. We'd borrowed money from a brother in our congregation to buy the building. But beyond that, in terms of equipment and inventory and so forth, we were trying to do it completely debt-free. And so the offer of his contribution was very meaningful to me, and I said, well, yeah, we'd be willing to accept. He said, I just wanted to say a couple things. One is, I don't ever want to see it again. He said, it's not my money. We don't need it. And he said, when you reach a point in time that you don't think you need it anymore, you pass it on to somebody else. And the other thing he said is, this being Sunday evening, he said, I'm not going to give you the money this evening. But he said, we're going to leave early in the morning and so we can get back to Indiana in the day and everything. And he said, I'm going to write you a check in the morning, and I'm going to put it in an envelope, and I'm going to leave it on top of the dresser. And so they left early, maybe 3 or 4 in the morning, and we didn't even get up to bid them farewell. And so they left. And, you know, I didn't want to be overeager, but I couldn't help, you know. Couldn't help going in there and finding that envelope. And I opened it up, and I'll just tell you what was in there. And it, in our small business world, it's quite a bit. It's a check for $10,000. And I thought, wow. I think we can use that. So we deposited it in the bank, and we bought inventory with it, and we didn't necessarily identify it. You know how it is. You put it in your bank account, and you put it to work. But we utilized it, and we were very thankful and appreciative. Even today, it makes me feel tender toward them to think of their sharing of us and toward us in that way and so forth. But I just want to describe a feeling that I had as our business transpired, and we operated for 12 years, And I always felt like that $10,000, it's somewhere in our business floating around. It's not identified. I mean, I didn't peg it toward a certain investment, but it's in our business, but it's not really ours. It was his, and he said it wasn't really his even. And so there's this money sloshing around in here, and we were using it like it was ours, but it wasn't ours. And I always thought, we've got to be very careful what we do with that $10,000 because it's not our money. And of course, I'm building up to this point. What money do we have sloshing around in our business that really is our money? And what do we have that we have not received? And God help us to plan wisely as we steward those resources that we have been given for a little while that are not our own. That's all we have. Till this afternoon, God bless you and thank you.